Indie Nation listeners, you're listening to a special edition of TechNet News and Opinion. We decided since we had four good stories on the good company Google, we would combine them together for a extended version of TechNet News and Opinion for your downloading pleasure. Thank you for listening and enjoy. This week in Google News, I guess.
Google seems to, well, I'm subscribed to Google's blog, so.
Well, I am too, and we often both pick up things, and then everybody is subscribed to Google's blog, I think, that's in news, you know. So I get to go first tonight with a headline from the official blog, actually, Exploring New Cities for Google Fiber. Networks they're working on, you know, a lot of cities, municipalities, 100 times faster than what we have today, right? And Google's been involved with this. What, I forget, what was the pilot? How many cities? Three, I think?
Yeah, it was pretty much a triangle. It was three cities.
And it went well, and they want to share what they learned, and they're going to try up to 34 they're looking at. They're not saying they're going to do all of them, though. They're saying they're exploring.
A lot of them around, like, what, Atlanta?
Yeah.
They have a bundle of them there. In North Carolina, and then down near the San Jose area, they've got a bundle, and then right around Portland. So it looks like they're going to do a bunch of the cities around those major cities. And then other than that, they've already done Provo, so they're probably assuming they can just connect into Salt Lake and get a lot of business there. And then Phoenix has two other, besides Phoenix, there's two cities outside that they're going to do.
Oh, I think it's great, and obviously Google's got to love it because they're about data and information. But I think it's also great that, you know, they plan on sharing their information. Even if the city doesn't get it, they say, you know, at the end of the article, they'll still get an information and a benefit where other providers would be more likely to come there.
Yeah.
So they're sharing their information.
Well, this is something that's different about Google is what they have that free tier. So people can get, I think, a 5 megabit down, one up or something similar to that. For free from the Google Fiber without having monthly service. So you know, anyone in the area gets a benefit from it.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I mean, you got your old grandmas that sit there and just check the email once in a while. That plan would be just fine for them. Yeah, anybody who wants to stream Netflix or you know something more than that, that's where they would want to go in and actually get a paid connection.
I think.
Now, one thing I was looking at is with the Fiber, remember when they did that contest? It was originally, I think, for Kansas City that won it, but they did that contest for cities to submit, applications, you know, video. It was supposed to be a cute video, but that's how they launched this whole thing.
Yeah, that, I remember that, yeah.
I was so frustrated when nobody from Boise, I figured it would be beneficial if the city put out, what, $10,000?
Some type of award? Some type of incentive?
Yeah, $10,000 or something to put out a cool video just because the incentive and the actual benefit to the city would be so much more than $10,000. It would be millions and millions of dollars worth of benefit to the city, you know, at least.
And
having them come here, they could have taken the initiative to try to get it to their town, and our city didn't. I just don't know. I guess, you know, they're not that technological minded.
Well, I don't see a dot near Cleveland either, so you're not alone.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's just for me, Boise is a place that just should have so much better internet. You know, we've got HP here. We got to have Micron here. You know, we have some major technology companies that are here, but we have lousy internet.
I don't see. You're kind of like in a big gap there on your dots too, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. We're both in like voids in a triangle.
Well, we're just between, like, the reason we have internet's because there's something going from Salt Lake up to Seattle. We're just
right.
A little spot in the middle, you know. We're not a hub.
I don't see it anywhere near Cleveland either.
Yeah, it seems like if you're near Canada, you don't get any love.
No. Did you guys warm up out there?
Oh yeah, today it was actually a lot nicer. We had the sun out for a while, and actually, you know, my pet pig Ellie, I put her out in her caged area for most of the day because she just wanted to go out there, and you know, she loves eating grass, so she'll sit out there and graze all day. So she roots, so she'll like she loves grass because she can root for buried little rocks and pine cones and, you know, just anything that's buried.
No,
she'll dig them up, and it's not, she doesn't really do anything with them. She just digs the, it's the joy of finding them.
No, I wouldn't be doing no digging here. I don't know if you heard.
I don't think they have enough dirt.
You know, but we'll get back to Google in a second. But yeah, it's been cold here this year. The lake froze over like over 90% this year. The Great Lakes froze over. Time since 1994. We're still 80-some% frozen. And I think Wednesday it's going to be a high of 14, a low of 1.
Man, that global warming's a killer.
Isn't it? Anyways. Yeah, check it out on Google Earth. I'm sure you can get that.
Is it actually current?
Well, I'm sure it's pretty current. They keep it pretty current, don't they? Google.
Well, I don't know. It used to be that they would update it every couple of years, but I'm sure now they have the opportunity just to
do it so much quicker.
I mean, realistically, they could do it every month if they wanted to. I mean, I'm sure that the satellites sweep over currently. They're probably just worried about maybe maps being a little bit off, you know, to where maybe they're 3D mapping. So I don't know. Maybe there's a reason there's some work involved where they don't do it all the time.
I don't know. But, yeah, it was plenty frozen. I'm sure you could find images Great Lakes frozen on Google, though.
Yeah, I'm sure they do have some.
It's been bitterly cold, but we were on the subject of 4 by Google. You got the next one, which, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is something I actually noticed in my, because I use Google Apps, and I think mm-hmm. you do too, right, for your email. I have Google Apps, and I noticed next to one of the just emails that comes in normally, it has an unsubscribe button right to the right of the actual email address of the person who's sending it to you. And so if it's something that's a known, like they have an example of Kohl's, you know, you're receiving the discount coupon.
Automatic Kohl's unsubscribe.
Yeah, there's a little button. You click it, and it'll unsubscribe you from that that mailing list. And so that's pretty cool because I'm always worried about clicking unsubscribe because I've always heard that that's something that they, you know, sure, they'll take you off the one list, but they know that you're a real account and they'll add you to 10 more.
Right, right.
So, you know, for this, it just seemed like if they have a way to do it in the background and they know that this is going to be a legitimate way of unsubscribing, I trust it a lot more.
It's probably putting them on some type of blacklist, don't you think?
No, I think that it would probably, they probably have worked out a system to where it unsubscribe actually would, like, it would go to Kohl's and request for you to be unsubscribed them from the list without you having to go to a separate website and, you know, check with boxes saying I want to unsubscribe from these lists. Because there is an automatic unsubscribe, you know, that if you click something.
Yeah, and it takes you to a website.
They're required to do it. It'll take
but
you
does
to
it work?
Site. Yeah, and you never know if you're truly off of it. This, I'd assume that they've got it worked out to where, you know, not that there's a penalty, but you don't want to get in Google's bad side. You know, so people that are legitimate mailings, they don't want to get put on Google's blacklist. And this is a way that if they don't listen, they're probably more likely to get on a blacklist somewhere.
I think it's a good thing.
It's not, and actually, I don't think this is at lifehacker.com that I found this.
I'm a big advocate of evolution and spam filtering. I filter like crazy.
Yeah, and that's kind of the issue with when you're a part of Google Apps, I don't have the control of my server to be able to filter the content. So I have some email accounts that are on my server and then my main accounts on Google, just because it gives me so much flexibility with my phones as far as
mm-hmm.
contacts, calendars, and everything else.
Android does rock. It's seamless. Really is. Yeah, I do really like that.
Well, and just the fact that you can add your contacts, you know, you add it. Like for me, I use, since I'm Windows, I know you're Linux, but I use an app for my email that actually, it's called EM Client, and it actually syncs up with Google, or now it actually works with Outlook.com seamlessly. So your calendar from Outlook.com or from Google and your contacts and your tasks, anything you have in there syncs up to this app. So I can remove and add contacts uh-huh. inside of my email client, and it instantly adds them to my phone, and it adds them to
I'm using Evolution, which is a little older. as an email client.
But it works really well. Actually, I sent my dad on Evolution, and it works better than Thunderbird.
Well, Evolution, though, will sync with Google Calendar as well.
Yeah, and it works very well.
And the other thing is it still works with my old clunky Palm Pilot.
Use a plugin. Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
That works?
It still works. I don't sync email with a, you know, with the Palm M500. I mean, come on. You know how quick that would fill?
You'll fill up the memory in a day.
One sync, yeah. So, yeah, but Google Calendar syncs with Evolution very well. And then, you know, that syncs with my Android. It's seamless. And now you're talking about this unsubscribe. So, you know, the next thing you're going to see in the future is things like they'll probably have a schedule appointment or contact or go to website all right in for you with legit services in sight. Because one of the things, you know, well, you and I both like Google. Why do we both like Google? You know, we like Google because we kind of trust them.
Yeah.
They're pretty open. They're pretty fair as far as internet companies and stuff go in this day and age. And they're very innovative, and they make life very easy for you. That's why AdSense worked. They know how to get the right thing in front of the right people. We don't really mind. It's kind of cool. You're giving us free email, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's out of the box. It's 8 gigabytes of space,
right?
Which is great. I mean, I get people that start using like 8 gigabytes on my server, and then I email them and telling them, you know, all right, you need to start clearing out some of your old emails. It's, you know, it adds up. You get 50 email counts and at 8 gigabytes a piece, that's quite a bit of space.
And the other thing that I think is, you know, as a provider, you know, even with their premium or whatever, as far as email goes, everybody has a gmail.com anymore. And, you know, it's like some people might still have yahoo.com, but really, why would you? And the reason I'm bringing that up is I just got a whole other barrage from hijacked Yahoo accounts recently. So, it's partially a matter of trust because you used to use Yahoo back in the day, didn't you? I mean, admit it. We all did. Brian? Uh-oh. Brian disappeared. I don't know if he dropped out of chat as well. Oh, yeah, he did. He just came. Oh, no, he's still in chat. He'll be coming back in a moment. But, yeah, we all used to have a Yahoo account back in the day.
All right, I'm back. Yeah, I disconnected for a second, so.
Yeah.
I don't know. The internet went down and came back up. It's
doing it again. Oh, my.
Yeah, I should be coming back.
Same thing's happening on the Indie Nation server, so I know it's not me this time, but you're back, aren't you?
Yep, I'm back.
Well, I was saying, though, but back in the day, we all had Yahoo accounts, right?
Yeah, actually.
I mean, we all did.
And Yahoo Messenger. It seemed like everybody used Yahoo Messenger.
But it's a matter of what we want, a matter of trust in a sense. I really think Google does well because people trust them, and they do provide a good email service. It's pretty much spam-free, even the free one.
Yeah.
So going back to what we're talking about with this unsubscribe story, to close it out, it will work if it builds that trust-desire relationship. Because we want Google stuff.
And anything they can add to make it so, because for them, this is also a safety thing. You kind of worry about people receiving something in their inbox and some sort of phishing attempt come out of it, right? You know, someone clicking unsubscribe and it says, oh, okay, well, to unsubscribe you, we need your username and password, right?
And your charge
code. That can be a danger. People will put those sort of things in. So this being an automated thing, anything they can do that takes that possibility of a user doing something to harm themselves is great.
And like I said, you know they can build on it with how connected they've made everything. I'm serious. I can see appointment confirmations or make an appointment buttons go right to your calendar.
Well, and they do this with like OK Google on the Android devices. If I say to my phone, OK Google, schedule an appointment for 2 o'clock tomorrow. To have lunch with Lumpy, and it will schedule with you because you're in my contact list is Lumpy as well at 2 o'clock, and it'll title it lunch, and it'll put it in my calendar for me. So that is there. You know, if they can get it to where it's on the desktop the same way, which I think that, you know, there probably is a way to do it, but a lot of times they don't make it totally public. Like they add things background, or if you go search for it, it's there. But yeah, you know, once there's the day that they say, okay, this is public and now everybody can see it, just like the Google Maps. The Google Maps has been the new version for a while, you know, as an optional test, and now they just rolled it out as public. So it's, I think it's probably all there.
It's probably, I'm just saying it's a possibility. I still think it's a trust relationship, and you're talking about and wanting it, right? Which I think is
yeah.
Okay, well, we got to go to the next one on that one. It's from ArsTechnica.com, and the headlines, Google buys Slick Login, a startup out to kill the password with sound. Okay, pun intended, real slick move, because you're the one who posted this up, Brian. So, what's the deal? I mean, look at that, just what the first paragraph says. Amazing.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing, you know, I was kind of looking at this and saying, well, you know, how can they do this? They're treating it like a two-factor authentication is for logging into your PC. So if you have a microphone, which, you know, most people have a webcam or a laptop, it's using an inaudible high-frequency sound to log in to the laptop or to the desktop. Or I guess you could do it with a laptop as well. But it's using your phone's speaker, puts out this high-pitched frequency. It's detected by your computer, and it'll log you in, not as a primary authentication, but as a secondary authentication.
And you don't have to enter in like 10 digits on a key.
Yeah.
You know, off of what do they call RSA keys? You know, you don't have to carry a token.
RSA tokens. Token.
Yeah. I think it's a cool idea.
And you don't have to type anything in. I mean, you know, if you pretty much walk up to your computer, you know, if it's listening, there it is.
But is it foolproof?
No, because what if you
right?
What if someone were able to record that audio? Now
it changes though.
So if they were able to record, you know, all the different attempts, the different series of sound that your phone would be putting out, I don't know if there's a way that they could then determine what the next sequence would be.
We covered a story here probably third or fourth quarter of last year where they did a proof of concept that with a microphone or a cell phone even, they could get the encryption key from your computer based on the way it's vibrating. So, yeah. But the thing is this one would constantly be changing.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much like one of those little
RSA tokens. Yeah.
Well, you got the thing that puts the numbers constantly changing that you can carry around on your keychain. It would be like that. But the only thing is you would have to let somebody see the screen of that. With this, since it's audio, there's no way to limit it. As long as someone could get a microphone within range, they'd be able to record that series of tones. Now, this, as I said, this is a secondary login. So maybe it doesn't have to be foolproof. Maybe it's just an extra step. And is this possibly a way that's going to get more people with microphones on their computer to where they can start taking advantage of the voice activations and voice search and all that stuff that Google.com and their apps can do? I wonder if this is kind of the play that they're going for. If they can get everybody logging in with this, that means everybody has a microphone and they can then implement something else.
And the article also points at possibly, you know, like it's dependent on your smartphone as the token. I don't, you know, when I go out and walk the dog and stuff, I guess I'm kind of old school. I don't always grab the phone. I suppose if I needed it to log into my computer, though, when I needed an RSA token, when I was doing that kind of work, I knew where to get my RSA token, and I made sure I had it at work. So I don't know if that's necessarily that big a downside. And
the problem with this is if you lose your phone, it becomes a pretty large pain to undo this, or it can be.
You know what, though? I think they can figure that out.
Because I remember, like, on my wife, she has a or she had a WoW account that she her two-step authentication for it. I got because it was using a phone, and her phone reset, and so that it lost that second authentication type, and mm-hmm. so she had to email them a copy of her driver's license and all this ridiculous stuff to get that thing off.
Blood sample.
Yeah, I just thought for this for a game, but you know, do try to hack it all the time. So I guess, you know, if made it easy and people got hacked, they'd be upset.
I still think it's a really slick idea because I don't necessarily agree with the downside even is why I brought it up. I mean, in this day and age, come on, my parents have cell phones, each of them, you know?
Yeah.
It's dependent on one device, but I don't think that's a fair criticism because so is an RSA key.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
And people are more likely to keep track of their phones than the RSA
keys. Yeah. People are more likely to keep track of their phones these days than their car keys, I think. Unfortunately, they're also more willing to keep track of their phones than the road in front of them. I also think that they're more likely, sometimes even more unfortunate, they're more likely to pay attention to their phone than their kid. My argument against that is you're more likely to have your phone than your RSA key. End of line. Where are your car keys right now? Where's your phone?
It's on the desk here.
Yeah. Okay. Where are my car keys? They're on my dresser. My phone's in my pocket on silent.
Yeah.
No, I don't.
That's when you use it ringing. And that's the thing is I keep track of where my phone is throughout the day, and you know, if I don't need to go
anywhere.
That's
what I'm saying. We all do. You
know, before I'm leaving, I'm having to find my keys.
I don't think it's a flaw. I think it's a fact of life. We have our phones with us almost all the time. I think it's a good move because now you don't have to carry a phone and an RSA key. If you needed an RSA key, would you leave your computer to log into it? Would you leave your phone behind? No, you would take both.
Yeah.
No. And one more on Google, right?
Yeah, so this one's from Ars Technica, and it's titled Google's Project Tango is a smartphone with Kinect-style computer vision. And so it came out on the 20th. They opened up signups for this device. And it's not like you're going to be the beta tester for it, so you're not going to sign up so that you can just receive one and play with it. What they're having signups for are for developers because they're wanting people to make applications that will actually take advantage of this new 3D mapping technology. And so what this device does is it has, first of all, multiple cameras on it. So on the back of it, it has two cameras that are a certain distance from each other, and that allows them to visualize things in 3D, just like our eyes. With a phone, when they only have one lens, there's not really a way for them to
find depth perception.
The distance. Yeah, there's no depth perception. Just like with our human eyes, there's no depth perception for this device. So what they've done with this phone is, first of all, added, and it's not on the front, so it's not a 360, but there's a 180, you know, pretty much 180 from the back of the camera. It'll record things from there. And with the two devices, be able to map out in 3D everything around it. And so they give some examples here where, you know, someone's walking down the hall and it's able to map in 3D on another computer, you know, the walls and the floor and the ceiling. And so you can kind of get an actual mapping of what it looks like inside of that building. And they're looking at it as a way of doing 3D scanning, indoor navigation, which I'm sure they're wanting to implement for their Google Maps. I mean, imagine if over time they recorded the indoors of major buildings. And then, because we looked at it and they map, you know, they have maps with Google Maps of 3D buildings in there, like all of New York. But with this, they'd actually would be able to map the insides of buildings and kind of get a rough sketch of what it looks like inside. So you could use Google Maps to go inside and figure out where you need to walk.
It's more than that, though, I think.
They're looking also at immersive gaming to where they can.
How about immersive marketing? You're in Walmart and can tell you what aisle and what shelf your product you want to find is on.
Yeah, so they'll be able to actually scan the shelves and see, okay, with the last 10 people, you know, I guess if you allowed them to track this information, with the last 10 people, when they walked down this aisle, Cheerios were on the left, Oreos were on the right. You know, I mean, they'd be able to say, all right, go down this aisle, and about halfway down, there's going to be what you're looking for. I mean, that's the possibility of this type of technology.
And then Walmart can pay them to say, we also have a similar product on sale in aisle such and such.
Yeah. I mean, it's very smart of them. But, you know, and then the immersive gaming, which I think...
Well, I mean, all of it's very cool. Yeah. I mean, the immersive gaming, this is basically how drones navigate when they navigate, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, multiple sensors, so they have a stereoscopic vision.
Well, and knowing Google, they're just fine-tuning the technology to be able to sell it again, you know, in these robots and drones that, you know, that we hear they're developing.
Autonomous cars?
Yep, autonomous cars is another thing. You know, they need to make sure that if a car's driving down the road, a dog runs out in front, okay, hit your brakes.
And if
a piece of paper is blowing across the road, don't hit your brakes.
You know what I just went and bought at the grocery store because I asked you where it was at, and you think I might have forgotten something, so you can suggest it. I forgot my car keys, but I remembered my cell phone, and I got a touch pad on the car now, so I can use a two-factor with the phone. I mean, we talk all the time about not you and I, but people talk all the time about the singularity and AI.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, this is the stuff that really, you know, see, now you could probably also automatically have your phone connected to your glasses somehow and just wear your phone in a special pocket so the right sensors would be pointing forward and collect information for your own use later. You know, you talked about the mapping ability of this.
So I'm assuming that they're looking at doing in the future, because it would be kind of odd to have your phone like strapped to your chest, right? Because they want to have.
Well, I'm not even talking about necessarily strapped to your chest, but in the manner you could carry it in a manner so that it could. Okay, you know where it would be really cool.
Well, but look at the Google Glasses though. All they have to do is add two cameras, one on each side.
Right.
You know, with these same sensors. So I think that they're just doing. They don't want to give everybody a Google Glasses for this. So they're coming out with a cell phone, because it's probably a lot cheaper for them to do. They're coming out with something that looks like a cell phone to be able to do all the testing of it. But I'm sure they're just going to implement this as one side of each side of the Google Glasses. And then as you walk down, it's going to be much more natural to have something like like glasses on your head, rather than having a cell phone strapped to the middle of your chest.
Well, you wouldn't. I'm not even saying necessarily. 3D mapping. Yeah, even with the cell phone. Can you imagine what it would be like for a shop, like let's say a machine screw shop with all these bins of inventory where the phone could probably, even the glasses or phone, you can scan the shelves and get a pretty accurate estimate if you engineer it right. You know how many screws it takes to fill that bin up that high, right? And or even like, you know, you're selling them, so they come in boxes of, let's say, 10 or cases of, 12 packs of 10 QRC codes. There's your inventory. Not only that, the one guy can scan that inventory, and if the shelves are organized right, it can actually know where that inventory is at for the next guy to go retrieve it.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of areas that they're. I mean, Google's always looking for the next big thing. I kind of heard somewhere in an article about Facebook, you know, people are saying that they bought WhatsApp because they ran out of ideas. One thing that you can't say about Google is that they've run out of ideas, because they're constantly putting out new things. People do get upset that they will try an idea out, and that if it doesn't work, they'll drop it. You know, they'll keep it going for a while, but they'll drop it. But, you know, them being willing to drop ideas that they feel didn't work is what allows them to come up with new ones, be able to put all their money and time into devices, these next gen devices that they think might work.
This is this is Google. I think it's innovative, but I just don't think people realize how much these supercomputers and these this is a super scanner. Let's face it, it's a 3D scanner.
Yeah,
we talk about the power of 3D printers. A 3D scanner, I guess if you could 3D scan something, then you can 3D print a model of it too. Right.
Yeah. The main issue would be anything that has holes in it. I mean, you could get a fairly rough.
I did
shaping.
Not. Oh no! It's pretty amazing. Actually, think about all the medical scanning. I can't remember where I read it. I'm going to say it right quick though. 18-month young baby heart problem. They from the ultrasound scans and stuff. They did do a 3D model for the surgeons to look at before the surgery.
Oh yeah, so they could get an idea of what they'd like to work on something that size.
Yeah, they printed it. You know, based off.
Yeah, that is cool.
So I mean, it is amazing there medically, and this is a good example of that. The other thing is what we were talking about, like scanning a shelf for inventory. Did you happen to catch that drone story on 60 Minutes about Amazon?
No, I don't think I saw that one.
Did you see how I'm going to move? Do I have the set-top box? No, we had the police arrest next. But let me just touch on the Amazon. And Amazon has everything in bins in their distribution centers. And do you know how they put it away when it comes in?
No.
Where it best fits.
Oh,
and it's scanned. And then a program figures out, by putting it randomly everywhere like that, it's actually quicker to put together a complete order. And then nice. You're told where to pull it from, what bin, and what route to go to the chutes and stuff. So, I mean, literally, can you imagine what a 3D scanner that could read, like, the UPC or the QRT codes and automatically know all that information to the meter, right?
Yeah.
Amazing. And, wow, we did what? 43 minutes on Google News. I think we might want to bust that one off as a separate one, because we do cover enough Google, and I don't mind at all.
There's good news for your earbuds. The best indie music. Indie Nation.
Indie Nation listeners, you've been listening to a special edition of TechNet News and Opinion, where we covered 4 good stories on Google. Thank you for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. And stay tuned for more combined episodes, so to speak, for your downloading pleasure. Also, remember, listener opinion is welcome, and listener participation is desired with TechNet News and Opinion. We do it every Monday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, with the exception of the second Monday of the month and federal holidays. Again, you can get in geekshed.net, Internet Relay Chat Network, and Pound Indie Nation, and get information on how to join us on the air. Again, thank you for listening.